there is an amazing opportunity right now. And I think one of the best things you can do is be an entrepreneur. And it's like investing in yourself and believing in yourself.
Welcome to Honest E-commerce, a podcast dedicated to cutting through the BS and finding actionable advice for online store owners. I'm your host, Chase Clymer, and I believe running a direct-to-consumer brand does not have to be complicated or a guessing game. On this podcast, we interview founders and experts who are putting in the work and creating real results. I also share my own insights from running our top Shopify consultancy, Electric Eye. We cut the fluff in favor of facts to help you grow your e-commerce business. Let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Honest E-commerce. I'm your host, Chase Clymer. And today, I'm welcoming to the show Daniel Winner. Daniel is the co-founder and CEO of Hexclad. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Chase. It's a real pleasure to join you.
I'm excited to chat. Now, I already made this joke in the pre-show, but for those that absolutely have been living under a rock for the last couple of years and are unaware of Hexclad, can you quickly let me know what type of products you guys are selling?
So we're this little tiny cookware company. we sell the most innovative kitchen products on the market right now. And our hero product is our cookware line called Hexclad, which was the first hybrid cookware. Really, it's kind of truly the only real hybrid. I've seen some people try to market themselves like a hybrid afterwards. But it's a true marriage of durability of stainless steel with the easy cleanup of nonstick.
Amazing. So take me back in time. Where did the idea for this business come from? Was it product-led? Did you know you wanted to get into cookware? Kind of walk me through the origin story.
So briefly, my co-founder and I, we actually worked for another cookware company. So I'd stumbled into the cookware business because I love to cook, but I wasn't a great chef. I'm just like a good home cook. I'd had family in the restaurant business. It's just grueling, horrible lifestyle. You got to be really passionate about it. So for me, kind of stumbling into it, it seemed like a great way to have my foot in it. So we actually, both worked for this company. I was the VP of sales and marketing, and Cole was my number one salesman. And, we kind of noticed that the future of this company seemed to be a bit of like a rudderless ship. And I went to the owner of the company around 2010, late 2010, and I had Facebook up on my laptop. I put it in front of him and I said, like, this is where we need to be. We got to create a community. And he shut me up mid-sentence, gave me the hand to the face and said, listen, kid, this Facebook thing, it's never going to last. And I'm like, okay. And I walked out of his office. I'm like, I got to start my own company. And really, Cole and I would go to the gym every night. And we started talking, and we knew we were wanting to do something with like a highly demonstrable kitchen product. And the cookware was actually our second product because in 2013, we launched a cold press juicer. And it was a ton of work. We were importing it from Korea. And what we never thought about was the fact that every corner was going to get a juice shop, a couple of years later. And it was a very humbling experience because, we hit around 2015 and things were great. And really in the middle of 16, like on a Tuesday night, we were in the juicer business, and on Wednesday morning, we were out of business, and we had to pull the plug that quickly. And there was a level of humiliation to it, ego bruising. Yet it's probably one of the best defining experiences that I've had because I very often, you're looking for the solution and or you're looking for the cause of this. And of course, often the last place we look is in the mirror. And, and that was it. Like I let ego define what I thought the market was in my head. And it was a bit of a vanity play. And really, I'm so glad I had the experience because when I met the guy who invented how to laser etch the hexagons on what turned out to be frying pans. Now, originally it was Korean barbecue plate. it was something where I looked at it without like a horse in the race, so to speak. I saw innovation there. I saw a market for it, but I pulled my ego out of it. And so in 2015 was when I first met the gentleman in China, who a Korean inventor who, like I said, had created this hybrid style of marrying nonstick with steel. And when I talked to him, I'm like, can we do this on frying pans? And he showed me a couple samples. I'm like, that's great, except nobody in the US would ever buy this. So I spent the rest of 15 and pretty much until the juicer died, designing the cookware with them, different handles, different weights, different sizes, until we got what I felt was like the perfect pan.
So was the juice company the same name?
No, it was a product called Juicepresso. It's, you haven't been able to get one for quite a while now, since mid 16. You know, believe me, we didn't know what to name the cookware. We had to trademark a name the next morning. And at 9:30 at night, Cole and I were just bouncing names off each other. And finally he's like, what about Hexclad? I'm like, okay, let's just do it. And it's funny. Since then, I've had branding people come to me and be like, oh my God, you know, who did your name? Like, what did it cost? I'm like, Colin, like, I think I was sipping on a vodka soda in my living room and we were just shooting the shit, you know, and then we came up with, you know, Hexclad. I mean, even I get compliments about our logo. We had no money. So I put a contest up on some online website for $199, and all these young, like, artists from Indonesia, Malaysia, they all sent in logos, and that's how we picked the logo. Cause, you know, we're completely self-funded. Everybody laughed at us when I tried to raise capital for a cookware company, especially one that I told them our strategy was D2C. I'm like, I don't care about Bed Bath and Beyond. I don't want to be there. And, so we couldn't get any investors. So when Cole and I believed in it, we just started applying for credit cards and paying one credit card with another credit card. I took penalties to cash out my IRA and my 401k, and we kind of went all in.
Okay, so you have the product after about a year of iteration, you have a name and you're going to go to market. It's direct consumer first. Was this back in 2016? Were you launching straight on Shopify? Did you look at any other avenues? Like, what was the go-to-market strategy?
So that's a really good question, because like I said, originally our plan was to be a D2C brand. Now we'd had a relationship from a previous life with Costco, and we thought because this was truly an innovative product, it needed its story told. And in my mind, we could do it two ways. I could sit down with you in person and tell you the story of this cookware, or I could create content and share it with you through a social platform and deliver that story that way. What was interesting to us about Costco was Costco loves the idea that you do a little demonstration in their store. You know, it's their model. You go there, you eat a piece of cheese, you walk around, and then you see these new products. So I'm like, that works. Where I thought we would fail if this was sat on the shelf in Bed Bath & Beyond or Williams-Sonoma, nobody's going to get what this is. So we wanted one key retail partner. Costco seemed like the best one. And, you know, and the weird thing about Costco is it's like so uncool, but it's cool at the same time. Like, you know, you can pull into a Costco and you're parked next to like a Rolls Royce, at least in LA. And then you go inside and that guy's eating the $1.50 hot dog and he's buying that $6 chicken. But then you can buy a $100,000 ring, or you can buy a Rolex in Costco. So, you know, so that was fortunate. And really, Costco just gave us a courtesy meeting in early 17. We launched our website. We had a Shopify store in around Thanksgiving of 16. And we sold our first pan. In fact, I still have the email, because we had a 3PL fulfilling for us at the time. And, you know, like, do you ever see you walk into like a little mom and pop store and they have their first dollar bill up behind the counter? That's kind of like what we think of our first email. We sold a 10-inch frying pan. And, but, it, you know, Costco, you know, over 16 into 17 at the end there, we were struggling to clearly do our messaging correctly. Like, how do I get you to understand who we are in 7 seconds, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, depending on however long I'm going to be able to keep, you know, keep your thumb from scrolling. And, you know, there was a lot of trial and error, a lot of error before, you know, we got it. And it kind of coincided when Costco gave us an opportunity at the end of 17. The first half of 17 was lean. Nobody had sold cookware online before. You know, we were the first one. So there was no playbook. So, you know, as I said, a lot of trial and error and a ton of error. And I remember the first time on Facebook that we really got some engagement was we took a static image and it was a really pretty picture of the pan. And it was, it was sexy. And we just put over the image, who says cookware can't be sexy? And all of a sudden people responded, and a lot of it was negative. A lot of it was like these old biddies, like, why do you have to make everything about sex? You know, you people, but they were engaging. So we were like, I didn't care, because now we finally got some people to talk about us. And that's when we realized we didn't really embrace who we are, right or wrong. We're badass, sexy cookware. We're durable cookware. You know what? We're not grandma's cookware. And that idea was what got us into Costco in 17, because, you know, you always go like, God, thank God I was paying attention. I'd read like a Forbes article about Costco and how they were worried that the average shopper was 55 years old. So when I went into the meeting, she's like, well, where do you sell? I'm like, D2C only. She's rolling her eyes. Well, I don't know if we can do this. And I said, well, listen, we're not for everyone, because we're not grandma's cookware. We're Gen Z's cookware. We're the millennials' cookware. And I saw her eyes light up. She's like, really? I'm like, she's like, tell me more. I'm like, yeah. And we only want one strategic retail partner, you guys. And that's it. If not, we're just going to be D2C. And at the end of the conversation, she was like, let me see if I can get this through. By the end of 17, we did our first store, one test store, Fountain Valley, California. And the first day, we sold $5,000 worth of cookware. And I walked out to my car and like a tear dripped down. It had been so stressful and we were like out of money. You know, Cole and I we actually had to put the sets of cookware together in his backyard because we couldn't afford to have them come packaged because we were so bootstrapped. And then that was the beginning of the rocket ship.
So before you get into Costco, you're working on identifying your messaging and you're, you know, trying to get it, crack the Facebook code, crack the paid ad code. Were you selling much of anything in that time?
Not really, not profitably. Like, that's for sure. You know, I'm trying to remember what our CAC was at the time, but it was like, you know, it was like double the price of a pan, you know, really what we were looking for, like, were any type of metrics of engagement at that point. We're like, I think I can sell them later on. So that, you know, and that was before the whole iOS, the operating, the 14, thick disaster. And you know, really, people really weren't buying Facebook ads for that long at that point. Like in 16, it was still somewhat new. So there weren't a ton of experts. There was a lot of people who could spend your money, but they weren't spending it as efficiently. And I always got worried, like, you know, we were meeting with certain companies and they're like, okay, you know, 15% on top of ad spend. And, you know, but they couldn't give me really answers on how they were strategically going to place these ads and how we were going to attach ourselves to the people that would be our core customers moving forward. So, and then by the time we did start with Costco, that gave us a cushion and that gave us the opportunity to be riskier with our strategy, You know, at the time was mostly Facebook and Instagram, and that was about it. You know, obviously now, you know, it goes all across, you know, different social platforms, though the Meta platforms still are the best performing.
Absolutely. And we'll get it a little more nerdy about that stuff a little later on. But do you remember during that time, before you landed the Costco deal, just to set an expectation for some young entrepreneur out there that might be kind of moving down a similar path, it's just like how much money you guys were eventually kind of just lighting on fire with Facebook just to learn?
So like we just did not have the budget. So in 17, when we start, you know, we start running paid ads, we were probably only the first couple months of 17, we were spending like, oh my God, like $50 a day, $80 a day, $100 a day. And and we were like, I think, you know, those first couple months we spent like $3,000 to $5,000, and we would make like 3,000 in sales, 1,800 in sales. But, you know, then those, as we dialed in the messaging a bit, then, you know, a $3,000 to $5,000 spend was making us, you know, about 10,000 in revenue. You know, really where we started getting, you know, another great thing what Costco did. So since we're doing these in-store demos, it's almost like a live focus group, because you're in front of these people and they're responding or they're not responding. And when they respond, you know what they're responding to. So I would take that messaging, what was working in store, and go, okay, how do we just, you know, fine tune that, focus it a bit, and then turn it into a Facebook ad. And really the first thing that really did, like as we tried to do some like artsy fartsy type stuff that wasn't converting, the first thing that converted was like me doing a quick video of the value props of the pan as if it was in Costco. And we just shot it really quickly. I mean, it's an awful video. I just got off a plane. I flew for 16 hours home from Europe. I wore a vest in the video because my shirt was so wrinkled right straight out of the suitcase. I never thought this video was going to see the light of day. And then our guys who were creating content, they're like, ooh, there was some good stuff there. And they just cut it without telling me and started running ads. And, you know, I looked so bad in it. Like I was getting mocked by my high school buddies. Like, they're like, dude, you look hungover. I'm like, well, I did have a couple of whiskeys on the flight. Maybe that's it. Or dude, why are you wearing that? They're making fun of my vest. So it was, but the fact was that messaging became the foundation of what we tried to do everything we tried to do afterwards, which was, how do we deliver a value prop quickly? What value props resonate? Which ones don't resonate with the audience? And so that was really telling. And when we got a new idea, we could experiment at it, demonstrating to the Costco customers in early 18. So then things really started to take off over 18. So each month we were getting better, and we were hiring some consultants because we didn't know what to expect. So these, you know-it-alls would come in and they'd be like, okay, we've analyzed the market and we've analyzed, you know, the e-commerce marketplace, and you can expect that you will get to no more than $100,000 a month in sales. And then like in 18, we'd hit $105,000 and I'd fire them. And like the guy who was doing a lot of our ad buying at the time, this guy, Sean, who's still part of the company, he would just roll his eyes, go, he's very like kind of soft spoken. He's like, I think we can do better. And then we'd hire these people who go, you know what? We've analyzed the market again, and, cookware can do about 250,000 a month, and that's about it. And then we do like 300. So we fire them, you know, and that kept happening over like 18 until, we finally got into seven figures in monthly revenue online. You know, in once we got into 19, heading into the beginning of 19, we started flirting with seven figures, and then we're breaking that by the end of the year, you know, before the pandemic hit and, you know, made everybody rethink things.
Hey there, merchant. Are you tired of trying to navigate the wild world of e-commerce on your own? Are you looking for a partner to help you achieve your goals? Look no further than the Shopify Plus agency, Electric Eye. Our team has a proven track record of helping our clients make millions with strategic design and development. Whether you're migrating from a legacy platform to Shopify, designing a new theme for your store, or just looking to optimize what you already have, Electric Eye is the perfect partner for you. Electric Eye are true Shopify experts. Not only is our Shopify knowledge unparalleled, but we have partnerships with all the best tech in the Shopify ecosystem. And don't worry, we're easy to get a hold of. Our clients rave about our fast communication. So here's the deal. If you're an e-commerce business doing over $1 million a year, you can receive a complimentary Shopify diagnostic from our team of experts. That's free, personalized, strategic recommendations to improve your store and grow your business. To get started, head on over to electriceye.io/connect to schedule an intro call with one of our experts. That's electriceye.io/connect. Today's episode is sponsored by IntelliGems, the ultimate A/B testing and profit optimization platform for Shopify merchants. You're investing tons of time and money to drive traffic to your store, but are you doing everything you can to convert that traffic into profits? With IntelliGems, you can stop guessing and start making strategic decisions. IntelliGems platform enables you to A/B test everything from themes to pricing so you can understand what makes your customers tick and click. Whether you're tweaking your UX, testing prices and offers, or trying out different shipping rates, IntelliGems provides real-time insights that can directly influence your store's profitability. Join the ranks of over 1,000 Shopify stores that are already maximizing their potential with IntelliGems. Setup is quick, and the results are undeniable. If you're not experimenting, you're leaving money on the table. It's that simple. Elevate your e-commerce strategy today. Visit intelligems.io/honest-e-commerce and use code honest-e-commerce for 10% off your first month. You can also find IntelliGems on the Shopify App Store and get a 7-day free trial. So there's a lot of growth that I feel I need to ask about. So what were some of the things, obviously your messaging, you were increasing your spends, you're getting more efficient with your spends. You were all in on kind of paid acquisition, but were there other things that you started to experiment with that was pouring gas on this fire and really helping you guys hit this? You did 100% year over year growth like multiple years in a row.
Yeah, well, in those time, like in from obviously 17 was we only did. I'm trying to remember now, 600,000 or 700,000. It wasn't that much. So obviously to get up to around 10 or 11 and 18, you know, that was significant. At that time, we were like tripling or quintupling, you know, for 17, 18, 19 in there. You know, there's things that we added, you know, like, you know, an influencer program was, you know, really good. We didn't have a lot of money to pay people. And I like when people have skin in the game, and you know, I don't want to pay you for doing nothing or in the hopes that you're going to do something. To me, that's a risky proposition. So I like that. Or to do some affiliate marketing, you know, where they do, you know, have skin in the game. So we started experimenting with those types of programs and that type of marketing, and we saw those results. And then the more people, and look, we have a bit of a cheat code, and that cheat code is, you know, humbly, as humble as I can be, we have the best product on the market in this space. We have a truly innovative product. So that's like, that makes it kind of unfair for other guys because there was no innovation in the cookware space. Like the last real innovation was Teflon came out in 1959. And then it was just a Teflon pan, a stainless steel pan, a cast iron skillet. And that was kind of it. And so now we had something that was a better mousetrap. And all I had to do was figure out the right way to tell you about it. The hardest thing is the product thing. I mean, you look at Steve Jobs, he made a better product. You know, we all see these things that he was a bit crazy or a bit eccentric. But you know what? He's like, I've got a better mousetrap. And now you just need to spread the message. So we have that. And, you know, as I've watched, you know, when you're the first D2C cookware brand, by the end of 17, I was seeing one or two other brands appearing And then in 18 and 19, I saw a ton of brands appearing that were D2C brands. However, I felt like they didn't really have something to sell other than, hey, our pan is pretty, or, you know, or our pan is, you know, got this like cool shape to it. It's, you know, got, it's powder blue, or it's like nothing against any of those brands. There's a market and a value prop that you have with your product, and you need to lean into it. But I think ultimately what it was, what's the overall strategy? And when Cole and I started the company, our goal was not for cash grab. And we to this day, we're not thinking about an exit. Like I wake up, I love my fucking job. You know, I love going to work every day. We were building a legacy brand. So you do things differently then, you know, than if you're hoping that you have these 5 years of tremendous growth and then private equity comes in and bails you out and you take your money and go do something else. I wanted to go on a lifelong journey with my customers. You know, I want to, that's why everything we build is built to last a long time. You know, we'd go broke giving a lifetime guarantee on our products if they didn't hold up that way. And in all the testing that we do, they hold up. And that's why, like, I look at some of these companies, you have a 1 year guarantee, a 1 year warranty, shame on you. That's almost stealing from the consumer. So when that's your overall strategy, I think that gives you a comfort level and gives you a little more runway, because I know I'm trying to get people for a lifetime. That takes a little bit longer and a little more effort, I believe.
Absolutely. We've talked about all these just tremendous wins, the growth, just getting into Costco. You know, let's pivot though. Is there anything in looking back in the brand's life cycle that you wish you maybe could do over, or any insights to share to like help other people avoid maybe a mistake or two that from the past?
You know, that's such a like a, you know, it's like, you know, do I have any regrets? You know, oh, well, you know, look, there's things I would do differently, I guess, but if I could switch them, I don't know if I would, because I do think every time I fail at something, you know, I'm a bit of a stoic and I'm a pragmatist. So I try to look at it and go, what can I learn from this situation? So, you know, so I wouldn't change anything, but what I would do is this. I would say to people, ask more questions. And this might seem silly. Sometimes I feel like I have to find the answer for something. And just like if I was sick, the last thing I should do is like my doctor has a thing in her office. It says, my medical degree is better than your Google search, you know? And, you know, so I'm like, sometimes I figure out I'm going to get the answer myself. And what I would say now is just ask people, do your research, but ask everybody. Hell, if I'd asked more people, some very close friends of mine said, hey, if you'd asked me, was the juicer a good idea? I would have told you probably not, but I did something that simple. So go ask people, ask questions, get their feedback, and don't get your feelings hurt. Don't get butt hurt over it, because it's like none of us are perfect. We're going to come up with bad ideas, bad marketing things, you know. I think like that's it. And really embrace your failures, because, you know, you're not always responsible for your successes. Sometimes it's just serendipity. Sometimes it's people you're working with, but very often you're the one who's responsible for the failure. So really embrace it and learn from it. Those are the two things I would tell like young entrepreneurs, if they have the ideas, you know, examine the failure, know your role in it, and then learn and pivot so we don't make the same mistake twice.
That's amazing, Danny. Now, is there anything I didn't ask you about that you think would resonate with our audience?
Oh, gosh. You know, look, I would say this. Very often, like, I'll be on a panel or something, and I get these, like, they're kind of like the lame, believe in yourself. don't take no for an answer. I mean, like we know that. That's what your parents tell you in T-ball. You know, we've got that. But the thing is, always question yourself. Because if you can't give yourself a positive answer in something, then that might be a wrong strategy. So I ask myself a lot of questions. Like, is this the right message I want to tell? Is this the right product I want to bring to market? Answer tough questions when you ask yourself them, because they will very often map out not only your strategy, but the path you need to take to market. So, you know, I would always tell people that, because, you know, so often you think my path is that way, right? Like that. And it's not. The path is that way. And, you know, when you have the blinders on, you only see that one way, but there's a lot of ways to get from A to B. And it's not always the fastest way. So, you know, and I think that's about being observant and opening your eyes. And it can sound kind of silly, but to not be myopic in business, because I think people often are, and it comes back to bite them in the ass, especially when they've overcommitted in that way.
Thanks for sharing that, Danny. Now, you talked about the product quite a bit, and you talked about one of the best advantages that any business can have, which is just have a good product. If I'm listening to this and I want to go check out the product, where should I go?
Well, you should go to hexclad.com. And not only is all the products there, but there's some great content. Obviously, we have a celebrity partner in our company, the biggest chef in the world, who is a real partner, by the way, like very, very involved, almost too involved. Like, he'll call me with product ideas. And I'm like, you listen, you do the TV thing. Let me do the product development thing.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And everyone go and figure that out for yourself. Also, if you're lucky, you might see a product demo at your local Costco as well. I know they do them here in Columbus, Ohio. I've seen it before. Danny, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today and sharing your story. Any parting words?
You know, Chase, I would just say this, because I love what you do and other podcast hosts, because I would tell any young person, like, you know, heading into college, getting out of college, dropping out of college, like, there is an amazing opportunity right now. And I think one of the best things you can do is be an entrepreneur. And it's like investing in yourself and believing in yourself. And you're going to fail. But guess what? If you keep with it, you're going to succeed. And I think I don't want to say, hey, don't go get a straight job. But I think, like, when people can listen to stories about various businesses being built, they can look at what they have inside of them and go, you know what? I can do that too. And so I just thank you for doing what you do. And, you know, and hopefully people listen to this. There's going to be a couple of people who are going to be inspired to build their own business and provide jobs and stimulate the economy and all those cool things.
Yeah. And then they'll be on the podcast in a couple of years.
Exactly.
Awesome, Danny. Thank you so much.
Chase, absolute pleasure.
We can't thank our guests enough for coming on the show and sharing their knowledge and journey with us. We've got a lot to think about and potentially add into our own businesses. You can find all the links in the show notes. You can subscribe to the newsletter at honestecommerce.co to get each episode delivered right into your inbox. If you're enjoying this content, consider leaving a review on iTunes. That really helps us out. Lastly, if you're a store owner looking for an amazing partner to help you get your Shopify store to the next level, reach out to Electric Eye at electriceye.io/connect. Until next time.